Bullseye. DART hits its mark. This week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. They did it, and they did it in the most spectacular way. The Double Asteroid Redirection Test spacecraft smashed into asteroid Dimorphos right on time, Monday, September 26th. We'll hear highlights of the last moments of its flight, and we'll get a post-impact report from DART coordination lead Nancy Schiavo. Have no fear, Bruce is also here with his usual night sky survey and a new space trivia contest that also celebrates DART. By the way, we've got more DART coverage online at planetary.org/radio and in this week's podcast. The big bonus there is my conversation with space artist and amateur astronomical image processor, Judy Schmidt. You may not know her name, but you've seen her outstanding work. It's a charming interview. Can you hear it in my voice? I had a blast at last week's NASA Innovative Advanced Concepts, or NIAC, symposium, and you'll hear my coverage soon. But I started feeling unwell on the trip home from Tucson. You guessed it. I tested positive for COVID that evening. No worries, it has been a relatively mild case, and I'm hoping to end my isolation soon. As you'll hear me tell Nancy Schiavo, it helped to be looking forward to that spectacular DART impact, which easily reaches the top of this week's space headlines. We'll also note that the Artemis 1 Space Launch System rocket and the Orion spacecraft made it safely back to the Kennedy Space Center Vehicle Assembly Building before Hurricane Ian hit Florida. Sadly, this means a more substantial delay in this uncrewed return to the moon. We've also got more proof that the JWST is good for much more than peering across the deep cosmos. Take a look at the September 23 edition of the Downlink, our free weekly newsletter. It features a spectroscopic examination of Mars by the Big New Space Telescope. The data has already helped scientists gain new insights about the red planet. The Downlink also notes France's intent to increase space spending by a quarter to about 9 billion euros. The European Space Agency looks to do the same. There's much more to discover at planetary.org/downlink. Congratulations to the entire International DART team on your knockout success. I was watching online with hundreds of thousands, probably millions around the globe, as the spacecraft closed in on Dimorphos. The last image, relayed to Earth just before the spacecraft smashed into the 85-meter asteroid, revealed a boulder-strewn surface, much like what we've seen on Ryugu and Bennu. Those boulders didn't know what hit them. I've compressed the last 30 minutes of the mission into just over four. The first voice you'll hear is Mission Systems Engineer Elena Adams, polling the key players. Also featured from the Applied Physics Lab webcast is Lori Glaze, NASA's Planetary Science Division Director.
This is DART MSC on DT Mach. It is time for the last status poll. Yes. We're about, 7,000 miles from Dimorphos at this point? So, yay. All right. Image quality. How are we doing?
Still looking very good. Dimorphos still tracking along that same brightness predict as Didymos.
That's great. All right.
Maneuver complete.
Yes, thank you. All right. SmartNav.
SmartNav is looking nominal. We are at under 30 meters of projected miss distance right
now.
Yeah,
it's looking really good. Look at that. That's looking fantastic. GNC.
GNC also looking good. We've been very excited to do those burns, so we've been waiting a long time.
Oh, this is great. Autonomy.
Autonomy is green. The heaters are cycling nominally, and we've had no new fault rules firing.
Okay, wonderful. DSN.
DSN is green, and ESA is green. Got plenty of margin. Looks good.
All right, ground systems.
Ground system has been helping a few users manage clients, but everything is going fine there, and we are green.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you, guys. Completes the poll. Last one. All right, so Didymos is looking like itself. We'll see what Dimorphos is looking like soon.
MSC, this is SN5.
Go ahead, SN5.
We are precision locked and still tracking Dimorphos.
Yes. This was our last milestone. At this point, we're going to be working towards Dimorphos. I expect we're going to do some burns. We're about 4,500 miles away from Didymos and Dimorphos, so let's see what happens. This is DART MSC and DT Mach. 5 minutes till impact. 5 minutes till impact. We are at 1,100 miles away. Also, our window for sending any commands to the spacecraft is done. Contingency's done.
miles per hour, and remember, you know, 45 minutes ago, 55 minutes ago, we couldn't even resolve this object in space, and now we are, you can see us zeroing in right on target. I think we're starting to see more resolution. In fact, look at that. Didymos has even gone out of the view. We're now just seeing Dimorphos.
Oh, my goodness. Look at that.
Looks like control system settling down. Angular rates look really good. I think we're going to get the investigation team some good pictures.
No, come on. We can do better than that.
Starting to see those individual boulders there. You can see shadows
of the various rocks on the surface. Amazing, guys. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Looks to me like we're headed straight in.
Oh, my gosh.
Woo. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Eight,
yeah.
Seven,
oh,
six,
wow.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Oh, my gosh. Woo. Oh, wow.
Awaiting visual confirmation.
All right. We got it?
Waiting.
And we have impact. A family for humanity in the name of planetary defense.
Woo. Fantastic. Oh, fantastic. Oh, what a team and what an accomplishment.
Lori Glaze, Elena Adams, and others as DART hurtled toward asteroid Dimorphos. DART coordination lead Nancy Schabo has kept us informed about the mission for years. You may have caught my extended conversation with her on last week's show, recorded as DART closed in. Nancy graciously allowed me to check in with her again just a half day after the astonishing climax of the mission. Nancy, what can I say? Wow, absolutely astounding success. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I think wow and astounding are just fine things to say. The excitement is still high here at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, where I am right now, the next day after what was a smashing, spectacular success last night.
A smashing success, indeed. I would be shocked. I'd be so disappointed if people weren't still thrilled there. I just told you before we started recording that this has made my COVID isolation much more easy because I had this to look forward to and then to celebrate as I and, gosh, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, watched it last night as we speak. That was just so exciting. Where were you when the impact happened?
Well, I was here at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, and I'll just say that I hope you're feeling okay and, you know, and doing well. You know, it's the world we live in. But the world that we live in is an interesting place, right? There's a low things and high things that we can all celebrate together, right? I think one of the things this morning that I really value about this is that the team and the world experienced this moment together at the same time in all their different ways. You were in your house. I was sitting actually at the NASA broadcast desk, which was a, a little surreal because I was slated to go on right after that. And so they get you in that chair early and you're sitting there and, you know, it's me and the host and some camera people. And we're all watching that TV there in real time in this kind of isolated, quiet environment. We were celebrating our little team. But over here at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, you saw the Mission Operations Center. You know, they were standing up and celebrating and everything like that. There was a big watch party out here. And so people were outside. A lot of the team members were able to bring their families and they were outside watching it here. And parties were around the world for watch parties with this. And I think everybody has a little story about like how they saw this happen.
Great job, by the way. I saw you at the anchor desk there, almost closing out the webcast last night, the live coverage. And we actually had a recording one of my colleagues made of that watch party that our boss, Bill Nye, had a part in. It was great to see him as part of that as well. You were watching as Lori Glaze, the head of the Planetary Science Division, was also blown away by that smashing success.
Yeah, I think we all gathered here together and the team has worked so hard in order to make that moment happen. It really has been years and hundreds, really actually thousands of people when you take our international team into consideration that have worked on this for years. Even before that, it was a concept that people wanted to do. So to have everybody come together for that moment, and we knew we were ready. We knew we had tested, but that doesn't change the fact that it was hard and had never been done before. So there's nerves and anxiety, anticipation, and then just so much joy when those images came in, and they were beautiful. They were beautiful images. I mean, I just think about the team that built that camera, you know, here at APL, like how proud must they be? That team that designed the autonomous navigation, right? I mean, and it went right into that asteroid. Everything was fabulous. And I will say that people here on the science team, even though we had a big watch party here at APL with Bill Nye, like you said, some of them went up into their offices to start running models right away. They saw those first images and said, like, celebrated. And then they're like, let's get to work, understanding what this means. People have been waiting for this moment for on both sides, from the technology establishing that you could target a small asteroid in space. And then on the science side, like what actually happens when you run a spacecraft into an asteroid. And that's where we are now.
The scientists must be thrilled by those last images, which looked a lot like what we got to see at Ryugu and Bennu. Lots of pretty little boulders.
Lots of pretty little boulders and rocks. And I think one of the things that we've been talking about on the science side is, I don't know, maybe how unremarkable the shape is, you know, that it's kind of like an egg, you know, I guess is what people are describing it as to a certain extent. We haven't done all the analysis and the modeling, but, you know, a lot of other objects that we've seen in space, they turn out to have these weird shapes, you know, and there was you know, the comet CG that Rosetta went to, Churyumov-Gerasimenko, right? You know, and they call that the rubber ducky and, you know, and instead it's like you were just zooming in with those Draco images, which were spectacular, onto sort of this mostly roundish kind of asteroid. And that's fascinating in itself.
Do we have any idea yet what the scale of those images was? I mean, just how big were those rocks and boulders?
Well, the final images that came out sort of show things at the 10 centimeters, less than 10 centimeters sort of scale. So you're really seeing these like fine details down in those final images. So, but you came in really quick, right? So saying that isn't the 1 second image before that was 6 kilometers further away. So your scale was quite different. So, but the final images there and just that little partial image that came across
yes.
Has the highest resolution. So it'll be fun that we have that data at so many different scales, from just seeing it as a few pixels of a point of light and then going into being able to see things that are like the size of your hand.
Do we have any word yet about whether Lucia Cube, that little Italian space agency CubeSat, was it successful in imaging the impact?
Yeah. So, you know, we were celebrating those Draco images in here, but Lucia Cube was still working, right? You know, so it was busy out there in space gathering those images. And yeah, they were lucky enough to get some downlink time and get them back quickly. I think they just had a press conference, actually, a few minutes before I'm here talking to you, where they showed some of those first images. And just seeing them there, you know, I only saw them briefly, but they looked spectacular. So it's tremendous. We're super happy and excited excited for our Italian colleagues, and we're excited for this international mission that is DART and Lycia Cube and scientists around the world for planetary defense for this international issue, and everybody working together to understand what this means for planetary defense and potentially protecting the Earth in the future.
Huge congratulations then to those folks at OSSI who pulled this off. Can't wait to see those images. I have not seen those yet. Any preliminary reports yet from ground-based telescopes that we're watching? And I saw that even the Hubble and JWST have their eyes on Dimorphos.
Yeah, so even last night, and especially on social media, you know, the telescopes that could directly image the impact event, you know, were in that position of the night here on the Earth, they started to post some images where they saw brightening of the system, the brightening due to that pulverized rock and ejecta that was thrown off during DART's energetic collision with Dimorphos. And they noticed that in the telescopes, and it was fun to watch telescopes in these different locations continually post these pictures or these little short movies of that happening. And so that was an immediate confirmation. JWST and HST, they were looking too, and those data are making their way here and people are analyzing them. So I expect probably in the next day or so, we'll probably be able to get some results out from those. And then we need to figure out what the period change is. That's going to take a longer baseline. So the telescope's got some initial work. They're still characterizing, you know, how long the ejecta will stay in the system, how long it'll take for that brightening to damp down, because you need that ejecta and brightening to damp down before you can make that measurement again of like how much the period change was, because you can't really make that sensitive measurement of Dimorphos going around Didymos if your system is super bright with all the dust all over the place. But having the dust all over the place is a huge thing to study, right? So, you know, we've always hoped for ejecta and dust that we could study and get information from that, and being able to get the period change as we go forward. So it's hard to believe it hasn't even been 24 hours since this happened, because the data is coming in so quickly, and we're just excited about digging into it and figuring out what it means.
Aren't we still just at the beginning here? I mean, really, if we're going to do effective planetary defense based on this research, don't we need to do this 5 or 10 more times?
Well, this is just one part of a larger planetary defense strategy. And yeah, DART is not something that you do in isolation. You know, fundamental to planetary defense is knowing where the asteroids are. And so we really need to have that warning time. Something like DART only works if you can do this years in advance, like you were saying. And so that's why it's got to be a priority for finding those asteroids, assessing them, and constantly identifying if there is a threat to the Earth, and then putting us in a position where we have the warning time to potentially do something about it. Yeah, DART, though, from being able to protect the Earth potentially from asteroids if a threat was found in the future, you know, it's always important. We probably should say there are no known asteroid threats to the Earth from the ones that we've discovered so far. Earth has been hit by asteroids for billions of years, and this will continue, though, right? So we want to be in a position to be ready, even though there is no known threat currently.
Nancy, thank you to you, the entire DART team, for helping us achieve this first step with such excitement for people around the world. And thank you again for joining us really just hours after this. What did you call it again?
A smashing, spectacular success.
There you go. I hope that there is much more great data ahead of us in the coming days, and look forward to maybe welcoming you back to get a little summary once we have most of that data in. Thank you so much for years now, keeping us up to date on what's happening with DART.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for sharing it. I think that's really what we do these missions for, too, as well. You know, here on the team, we're just this is all part of something that we want to share with the world. So thank you for helping make that happen.
You bet. And I will say it again, and I don't think it'll be the last time. Go DART.
Well, DART's done its duty, but the team is still busy.
Double Asteroid Redirection Test Coordination Lead, Nancy Schiavo. I'll be right back with Bruce. This is Planetary Radio.
There's so much going on in the world of space science and exploration, and we're here to share it with you. Hi, I'm Sarah, Digital Community Manager for the Planetary Society. Want more space? We've got the latest news, pretty planetary pictures, and Planetary Society publications on our social media channels. You can find the Planetary Society on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I hope you'll like and subscribe so you never miss the next exciting update from the world of planetary science.
Hello, I'm George Takei, and as you know, I'm very proud of my association with Star Trek. Star Trek was a show that looked to the future with optimism, boldly going where no one had gone before. I want you to know about a very special organization called the Planetary Society. They are working to make the future that Star Trek represents a reality. Boldly go to build our future.
It's time for What's Up on Planetary Radio. Here is the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, Dr. Bruce Betts, who is very glad, I'm sure, to be talking with me virtually this time. Welcome.
I am indeed, but I've looked it up, and apparently I can only catch computer viruses by doing this.
I'm glad.
But I'm so sorry you've got COVID, Matt. I feel badly for you. I do want to, at the risk of changing my behavior entirely, compliment you. First, let's compliment me. I've been on every show that we've ever done in 20 years.
Yes.
Matt has like never missed a show. I twisted his arm like a decade ago and he ran a mostly repeat a couple times. Doesn't matter, come rain, shine, COVID. He not only records the show, he produces it, he edits it, and he makes it the glorious piece of art that it is. We appreciate it. I can't believe you do this and have done this, and I'm in awe.
Hey, the breathe right is because I'm going out for the Minnesota Vikings. It has nothing to do with COVID.
What? Oh, God. They're having enough problems. Actually, they're doing okay.
Thank you. I appreciate all of that. And yeah, you're right. Every single show, even the ones with repeated features, and those have been few and far between, has had new content, especially a brand new What's Up, because after all, the night sky changes every week.
It waits for no one. So let's talk about the night sky and the evening sky. When the sun sets, if you look over in the east, you'll see really bright Jupiter looking lovely. And if you look up above it a ways, you'll see yellowish Saturn looking lovely. And if you wait 2, 3, 4 hours until the late evening, you'll see Mars come up. And Mars getting brighter and brighter as we get closer in our orbits. And it's hanging out near Aldebaran, the bright reddish star in Taurus. But it puts Aldebaran to shame right at the moment because of its glorious brightness. And you might be able to check out Mercury, not quite yet, but in a few days in the pre-dawn sky low in the east. On to This Week in Space History. Nothing. Well, there were a couple things this week, insignificant things. 1957, October 4th. What is that? Sputnik.
Yeah.
Sputnik was launched. Yeah. So first spacecraft, and then NASA was started a year later, October 1st, the official beginning of NASA.
Yeah. No coincidence there, by the way.
No. We move on to Random facts.
Oh, that sounds so good with the reverb.
Oh, nice. How far away is Voyager 1? Well, I'm glad you asked. As of September 2022, so now as we record this, in the amount of time it takes to send a radio signal at the speed of light to Voyager 1 and have it return a signal back at the speed of light, you could drive from L.A. to Boston with almost 2 hours to spare.
Wow.
This random space fact assumes a straight path with no brakes at 100 kilometers per hour.
All right. Yeah, I guess you'd still be within the speed limit. No stops for gas or potty breaks?
No, I'm a planetary scientist. I simplify things. We approximate, but still come up with about the right answer. We move on to the trivia question. I asked you approximately how long from launch will it take Korea's Denuri mission to reach the moon? It's on its way right as we speak. And how'd we do, Matt?
We got a nice response. Thank you, everybody. Here is the answer, I think, from Dave Fairchild in Kansas, the poet laureate of Planetary Radio. Danuri means enjoy the moon, so can you give an answer to why it's headed toward the sun? Ballistic lunar transfer. It's heading out to point L1, Lagrangian, remember, and should be captured by the moon around 16 December. Actually, he did provide the number of days as well, but I'm going to look to our winner, first-time winner, long-time listener, William Nowak, who says it's about 19 weeks and a day, August 4 to December 16, which is, and there's some question about this. Some people said 134 days, which is what this would be. Some said 135. Is this close enough?
That is close enough. That's as accurate as I could find it online. There may be a little fudge, but yeah, 134, 135 days to get to the moon. And to get to the moon, indeed, oddly, they travel to not the Earth-Moon L1 Lagrange point, which my brain might have understood, but the Earth-Sun L1 Lagrange point, a gravitational balance point, because then they go out there, they do it just right. They actually can use less fuel by hitting that gravitational balance point and then doing their thing and kind of cruising in and orbiting. Anyway, they get there. They'll get there. We're looking forward to it. Just impressive, certainly competing for one of the longest trips to the moon ever, but very cool. Congratulations to the Dory team for successful mission so far.
And congratulations, William, up there in beautiful Central California coast. You are going to receive that brand new and stunning JWST t-shirt from our friends at chopshopstore.com. That's all one word, by the way. It's where you will also find the Planetary Radio t-shirt, which I'm kind of biased. I'd say it's as beautiful. In fact, all of the Planetary Society merch is there at chopshopstore.com.
Good stuff. Did you want some good stuff for next time?
Please. Why break the habit now?
So, hey, did you see that spacecraft impact the asteroid?
I did catch that.
There's an interesting history of the getting to that point, and one of the pieces, of many pieces, was there was an ESA, European Space Agency, studied mission, just studied, called Don Quixote, which never went beyond a study, but was one of the many pieces that led to DART and Hera. So here's your question. What were the two spacecraft to be named that were to be part of the Don Quixote mission had it existed? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
I have a guess, which I would not be a bit surprised to learn is accurate, but I guess I'll just have to wait to find out. You have until the 5th, that'd be October 5th at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get your answer in. What else could we give away this week except a Planetary Society kick asteroid rubber asteroid.
Cool.
We're done.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about Matt Kaplan getting really healthy. Thank you, and good night.
It is devoutly to be wished. I appreciate that. It comes from the chief scientist of the Planetary Society, Bruce Betts, who joins us every week here for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by its often astonished members. Mark Hilverda and Ray Paletta are our associate producers. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which is arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. Ad Astra.